Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, Bobby, I think we ought to take a journey because I'm feeling a bit embryonic. What do you say?
It's fun being on video. I've actually seen you like our old days.
Welcome to the Writer's Block. This is LA Talk Radio, and my name is Jim Christina. I am your host for this, whatever this is. I'm sitting here staring at my lovely, charming, beautiful, talented, wonderful co-host, Bobby Jean Bell. Sitting in an old store in where are you? Oh,
the
Bishop, California.
No, Bodie, California. Bodie,
California.
Yeah, this is a photograph my brother took when he was in Bodie. Yeah.
Yeah, I did that. I did that 3-day ride from Bodie to Bishop for Mule Days 1 year. Friend of mine, yeah. Lou and I. And God, what fun. And I have to tell you, when you come out of the meeting before you go, and you look down the street, and there's nothing but horses tied up to hitching posts. And it's just so cool to look at it and say, wow, you know, when's a gunfight going to start? Never did, but yeah, hey, yeah. Could always. Hey, I don't know what your weather's like, but we've been like crazy. It was like almost 55 degrees today. But we're supposed to have a storm moving in the next couple, 2-3 days. So that'll make my dog happy. Make my wife happy too. She loves the snow now.
We have a little snow. We have a little snow. Yeah, we have a little snow now and then. And if you have dipped, it'll be gone before you hardly know you had it.
Yeah, I know it's like that around here most of the time too. You get it, and it looks really pretty for about an hour, and then your grass starts coming through again, and you go and then the cars have to go down the street and ruin the snow on the street and gets rid of the quiet. And now you got back to normal again, gunshots and, you know, all this stuff. Anyway, we have with us tonight, Bobby and I both read his book this week, and we were both blown away by the quality of this man's writing. And, you know, we gush at books. We do. And we gushed at one last week, and we gushed at one the week before. And this is another gusher I have done. This is his fourth, fifth?
He's written a number of books.
Right.
Yeah. In this series, I think this is. Yeah.
This is the second in the series. It's about a Southern police chief that is caught up in a whole bunch of stuff, racial stuff in the South. And it's a great story. I'll let him tell you about it. But Philip himself is, he's like the author of 5 novels. There you go. Old Anger. He was an Amazon bestseller. Outside the Law, Deep Blood, A Simple Murder, and Enemy Within. His short fiction has appeared in O Dark 30, The Dead Mule School of Southern Literature. I love that title. Out of the Gutter Online, Thrills, Kills, and Chaos, Near to the Knuckle, Yellow Mama, and The Seamus Sampler 2. He attended the Bread Loaf Writers Conference as a fiction writer. He lives in Virginia. You find him on Twitter, Ole Miss Grad 38, and online at philipthompsonbooks.com. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Philip Thompson. Thanks for joining us, Phil.
Second the applause.
Well, you know what? We have to put a leash on them every now and then because they do tend to get a little wild in here. But glad you agreed to join us tonight. And the name of your book, of course, is Old Anger, and it's making reference to the old thoughts and mores of the Old South. And I, your star character, your protagonist, is just a wonderful guy. This is his second book. And it's just I just absolutely love the book, and the story was just like it was just like so right on. And your protagonist's name is Colt, and he tries to walk the middle of the road, but it's not always easy being where he's from and what he does for a living. If you wouldn't mind, give us a brief. Brief history, or not history, but just a brief outline or a synopsis of this particular book.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's good to hear from you and talk about the book for a little bit. You set it up pretty well. This is a story about a sheriff in Mississippi who believes that he's colorblind when it comes to race and enforcing the law. But those beliefs get challenged pretty strongly when a black man is murdered in his county. And it sort of looks at the old concept of people saying, well, you know, I'm not a racist. And we can say that and get away with it sometimes. But what happens when you're actually confronted with that? I'm not a racist. And then you're actually forced to work your way through that. And that's what I tried to do with Colt. And yes, it opens with usually my books open with somebody being dead. And that's the case here. A black man is murdered. And he tries to walk that fine line that you referred to, and investigating, you know, all possible suspects, irrespective of their race or station in life. But he has a lot of baggage that he himself is not even aware of.
Right.
And it's baggage that he doesn't even believe that he would ever have. So it just follows his thinking process and some of the challenges he faces.
Right. Now, I was reading the book, it struck me that Colt is somewhat of he's a very knowledgeable in what he does. He's kind of real grounded in his feelings and his thoughts. But he's got that one piece in his brain that just is not quite buying the whole story. And I think about halfway through the book, he starts realizing that what he always thought, that he was middle of the road or trying to be neutral, he couldn't be. And right. I think that really bothered him probably more than anything. I really don't want to give away a lot because this book is just chock full of surprises. and oh my gosh. And, you know, anything we say about this book at this point, you know, it's going to be a spoiler alert. So we kind of have to be careful. Because we don't like giving away spoiler alerts. Even though the author says, I don't care. I don't care. Go ahead. You know, Bobby and I say, no, we don't do that.
Want you to read the book.
We want you to read the book and enjoy it as much as we did. And we did enjoy this book. Bobby and I talked today, and you and I talked the other night, and my comment was is that you don't give us a lot of Easter eggs in this book. You don't telegraph where it's going from point A to point B. It just kind of takes you there, and it's a surprise to you kind of usually when you get there as to what's going to happen or what is happening or going on. And I really like that about your writing. Your writing is really precise. It's concise, and your dialogue is it's masterful. Your dialogue is really well done. So kudos.
Thank you very much.
Now, do you feel the love? Do you feel the love here, Philip?
Oh, yeah. I'm not used to it, but I'm really enjoying it.
We will tell you. We would actually even tell you if the book, we read it and it didn't grab us.
Yeah,
because our promise.
That hasn't happened very much, though.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. Our promise to our authors on this show is that we will read your book.
Yeah.
Like for me, for instance, I didn't finish it until late this afternoon, but I did finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get into a book and just read. Although I would have loved to, I had so much other stuff going on this week. It just prohibited me from reading, sitting down and reading straight through, which I would love to have done. But the story is compelling. I mean, and it's so up to date. Actually, it's up to date from the 1860s, and you move forward, and it really hasn't changed, but through Jim Crow and all of that. And it's such a touchy subject, but you do it very well. And I have to say that talking about race and stuff in this day and age, which Bobby and I have, we have a deal on this show. We don't talk about religion and we don't talk about politics. But the racial tones in this book are so well done. I don't really think you can point your finger at it and say, well, it's a racist story or it's full of racist comments and remarks, because it's not.
No, I don't think that it is.
It's a damn good story, I have to say. And I appreciate getting to read it. And this book has only been out since, what, December?
December the 1st, that's correct.
Yeah.
It kind of startled me that, you know, I started writing this particular story a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it came out in December. And of course, everything that happened last summer started happening. And it startled me a little bit. And it's not like I watched television and then said, I'm going to write a novel and get it published before the 1st of December. Now, this story has, you know, this story's been in my head for probably about 40 years because I grew up in Mississippi and have experienced some of the things that are reflected in the book. And it turned out this story is as old as at least 1860, maybe even, you know, earlier than that.
Go ahead, Bobby.
That's right. I just wanted to jump in here for a moment. It's great to have you with us tonight. as a reader, well, your first line, so we don't give anything away because it's just your first line. Mm-hmm. Sheriff Colt Harper stared at the dead black man dangling from the dragline bucket. Well, as a reader, I'm already, of course, engaged. I also am already feeling a little bit uncomfortable because I already know that we're being set into a premise that is going to probably have some racial overtones. Your characters and your writing, as Jim said, is so direct and to the point, almost spare and yet full of description. You go on to describe this lanky man, Donnie Womple, and you describe him a gristle of a man. His arms were like steel cables that shot out of his short sleeve shirt and ended in hands that Colt was sure made fist like wrecking balls. That's like on page, you know, one. And I thought, oh, I am in for a ride.
Thank you. Tell all your friends that.
And you give us a real interesting cast of characters, and every one of them, you know, especially the people on Colt's side. We have John and we have Molly. You want to talk a little bit about every character? Kind of has some flaws that we as readers, I think, can really relate to. But you put them into this situation that allows them to, even though they're flawed.
Oh, good point, Bobby. Good point.
And Bobby, you sort of pulled the curtain back on me there by saying that. you know, when I started getting to know these characters years ago, and this is the second real Colt Harper series novel, Old Anger Is, Deep Blood, which you mentioned at the opening of the show, is sort of the prequel to the whole story, where you meet Colt Harper for the very, very first time. And when I, you know, when I met these characters probably 10 years ago now, I knew that I'm not interested in perfect characters, the ones with the dazzling smiles and the, you know, and the granite jaw. I'm only interested in flawed people because flawed people are interesting. And I happen to believe that they're a little bit more real. And then I want to do, and I was kind of, this is how I learned the craft of writing, is you take a character and you put him in a situation, or her, in the case of Molly, you put them in a situation and then let them tell you how they're going to react to that. So that's exactly what I was trying to do.
Right. Well, it's we've discussed this, I don't know how many times in this show, for 6 years, almost, it's been the same. We always ask our writers, who dictates the storyline to you as you're writing? And they all, without question, say the same thing. Oh, the characters. Characters always will tell you where they're going to go because you know them. And you know they're not going to act in a certain way. They're only going to act the way that they're used to acting. So you can't take them out of their context ever. It doesn't work, and they don't fit.
So, I agree with that completely.
So
sometimes they surprise you with their actions.
They do. They do. In fact, I'm like you. I like characters that are non-conventional. Of course, we discussed this the other night. I write Westerns, and my protagonists, I'd say plural because there are quite a few. They're not your normal Western cowboy book, you know, square jaw, 6 feet, wide shoulder, narrow hips, never get dirty, never have to go to the bathroom, never take care of their horses. My guys, bow-legged, old, crippled, you know, if they require a rock on their horse, it's just, I mean, they're real, real people. And that's, I think, what a lot of people like about my stories is that the people they read about are real. They're real.
Yeah.
You know, they're not perfect by any means. They're not perfect.
Right.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to take a real quick break. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back after this real brief word from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, in these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music to self-help to, well, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio, is the Writer's Block. Have a great day.
And we are back in the studio with our guest tonight, Mr. Philip Thompson. It is now, of course, 6:15 Pacific. And if you want to call and talk to Philip tonight, the number here in the studio, see if I get this right, Bobby, 323-803-0815. Did I do good?
I don't know.
Oh. Well, Rona just told me.
I didn't do that.
At any rate, if it's wrong, it's either 802 or 803-0815. I don't know. Anyway.
Can I jump back to where we were talking about characters for just a minute?
Yes.
Fill up the relationship between the deputy, John, and our main sheriff, Colt. They go back a really long time, don't they? Relationship that they have, and John, you let us know, is black, and Colt we know is white. And I think when we were talking before about characters having a life of their own and maybe choosing their own direction, it felt to me that in this book that they're both, even though they fought together, they've known each other forever, they're actually learning some things about each other that they didn't know, or at least John is opening Colt's eyes things about Colt himself that he didn't know. I found that was very interesting. Did the characters determine that, or had you already sort of planned that it was going to go that way?
I would say the characters determined that. as I, you know, we can get into process, you know, at some point if you want to, but I would say that Rhonda is the one who really prompted that, because Rhonda she's the moral conscience of the universe, especially as it relates to Colt. They have a history too. Mm-hmm. In this particular cast of characters, Rhonda has known Colt longer than anybody, and she knows him more intimately than anybody. So And she's black and John is black and Colt's, you know, very white. And he has never had their perspective. And that's what they show him. They show him that different perspective that he's never even had the opportunity to contemplate. And now John's that vehicle to do that.
Right. Well, I got the feeling in listening to or reading, it's almost like you're listening to their conversations. When reading their conversations, that John had almost an old, deep-seated anger at Colt for not necessarily not being black, but not really understanding, you know, the way he says he understands. And I think John takes it upon himself, and he does, to to re-educate Colt in some things. And I the way that turned out in that scenario really worked well. And I have to say, I got done reading that and I went, wow, that was powerful. That mm-hmm. was powerful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's a very apropos title, isn't it? Without giving any more things
anger,
away.
Absolutely.
As you get to the book and the title is so apt as we learn this whole story. So apt.
You know,
that phrase is.
Go ahead.
That phrase has been in my head for a long time, and when I was trying to come up with a title for this particular story, like I said, the phrase has been in my head for a long time, and it took me I don't know a couple of months to realize that phrase is actually a kind of a key point in Deep Blood, two books back. So I went back and looked at that story, and you talked about John having this long. You know, this long-seated resentment or even a misunderstanding about how does Colt's mind work anyway?
Right, right.
So it sort of came from that, yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody really knows how anybody from Mississippi's brain works. My best friend's from Mississippi, and I still can't figure him out. But, I had a friend while I was in the Army. I was in the hospital after I'd broken my back, and in the bed next to me in the ward was a Ranger that had done a halo opening, high altitude, low opening, and his chute didn't open. And he hit and shattered his entire leg from his hip down to his toes. And he and I laid in the same room together for, 3 months. And we had conversations about just about everything. And we were talking about race one day and talking about the people from the South and we were, you know, I had some old relatives that came over from Italy years and hundreds of years ago, and they had a plantation in Louisiana. And we were talking about that, and he goes, I know you don't have a racist bone in your body. He says, but I'm not pissed at you. I'm pissed at your great-grandfather mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. his attitude. And I thought, you know, that's very prophetic, really. I mean, I think, wow, does everybody feel that way? You know, it's not they're so much are mad at us. They're mad at our relatives for doing what they did right. and never let them out, you know. And it's just like, oh, okay, I got that. And that's the kind of feeling I got with John as well. There was a purpose to that story, incidentally. So,
yeah, I think you're pretty close to the original intent.
So, getting into process a little bit. This is a story that's very well crafted. I don't know who edited this book, but they did a great job. It is short.
Editor at Brash Books.
It is short. We talked about that the other night, but it really sticks to the point all the way through it. You don't wander off. You stick to your point all the way through, which makes it an easy read, a fast read, and it's a very interesting read. But I wonder, your chapter lengths are very short, and is that unplanned for you, or did that just turn out that way, or are you following James Patterson, who has two paragraph chapters and he goes to paragraph four, or goes to chapter three?
No, I'm not following James Patterson. It just turns out that way most of the time. I've found that I tend to write in chapters. And when I get to the end of that particular scene or thought process for that, you know, because the chapters are also written from a character's point of view.
Sure.
And when that point of view has run its course, to me, mentally, that becomes the chapter, whether it's 2 pages or 10. And I don't try to sit down and a 10-page chapter. And if what's next is 3 pages, then okay, it's a 3-page chapter. And I sort of thought that, well, these are really short chapters. And then I read a Larry Brown novel, and I think the shortest chapter he wrote was probably 4 sentences. And I was like, well, that's interesting, but it worked. So I didn't get too hung up on it.
I think James Patterson does it just so he can add more pages to his books. Bobby, what do you got?
I just wanted to comment, since we're talking about that I found it interesting that you do have chapters, but first you have like day one, and that right. we go through the days, and that makes so much sense. You know, you can only get, and every person can only get so much into one day, you know. And mm-hmm. so to organize it sort of day by day, I found as a reader, especially if I had to put it down, come back, that we've read books where we've gone through in the past, and then we're in the future, and then we're in the present. And, you know, Jim and I have gotten very accustomed to
bounce back and forth, and we go,
but I liked that day one, and then we have chapter one, cult, and so forth. I liked how you organized it that way.
Right.
Well, I did that for the exact same reasons. I have a hard time keeping up with, is this still the same day, or what day is this? And not only, you know, I had a problem with it, but at some point in the production of this narrative, the manuscript, the editor pointed it out as well. So I said, well, okay, well, let me organize it this way. And it sort of came up organically like that, but it did seem to work. And I found it very relieving to be able to, you know, frame the story that way. So even I, you know, the writer knew what day I was talking about when I was writing.
Well, and we know that within a day you're going to eat sometime, if not three meals. I mean, some of the activities that go on are how a person, you know, goes through a day. And so I would imagine, I was thinking about new writers and folks that are getting their feet underneath them, that that's kind of a great way maybe to organize one's thoughts. You know, it's like it's a day. And what are the things that are going to happen? You know, you're going to get up and you're going to start your day, and your day's eventually going to end, and there's going to be a whole lot of stuff. Hopefully it's going to happen in between. But I, again, as a reader, I liked that, and it helped me follow the storyline.
And you know, one thing about the Deep South is we do love our food. So, you know, of course you're gonna have some meals, and you sit down at a table with somebody and break bread with them. You're gonna a lot of food in my books. I'm not sure why that is, but I think it's because of the culture that I grew up around. You know, you get to know somebody, you know, over a meal, and it does guide you through the day.
Well, according to you the other night, though, you also get to know people in your redneck war and and your what is the bar noir, or whatever it's called?
Noir at the bar. That's right.
Yeah, noir at the bar.
Noir at the bar.
Wonderful groups of people. Event. Yeah, I wish I could show up to one just to sit and watch.
Well, you know, it's you can now, because so many of them have turned into virtual events, which was something we never thought about before the pandemic. But, you know, this whole thing was a grassroots sort of phenomenon, and I believe that it started in Los Angeles. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but I was telling you the other night, it's reminiscent of the old poetry slams, but with crime fiction writers. And a group of writers will get together, usually in a bar, usually not in the best part of town. And there's a microphone, and there's a bunch of writers, and they get in a corner, and they each get up and read a piece that, you know, a short story or a section of a book, and just go around the table, so to speak, and then sit down and have a drink with your friends. And you get to meet people that you've read but have never met. And it's to me, anyway, it's a fantastic event. And I've done three virtually now, which opens us up, as you know, doing this show. It opens you up to a entirely different audience when you can go out over the internet and reach three or four times the number of people that you would in a dive bar in Richmond, Virginia, for example.
Right. Well, I told you the other night, I said, that's my dire fear, is to sit around, get drunk with a bunch of guys, and have them get on a microphone and talk about my book. I'm just not too sure writing. I would live through that.
Yes, you you're would.
With you know, a huge self-loathing streak. Nobody, you give a writer a microphone, he's going to talk about nothing but himself.
You know, Bobby and I, when we were putting this show together, that was one of the first things we said. Well, writers love to talk. What's their favorite topic is them. So we should never have a problem getting them to talk. And with that in mind, hang on just a second. We're going to take another short break, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is a Writer's Block, and we'll be back with you in just a moment after a real short message from Out West.
I have exciting news. I'm announcing a new contest, Baking with Love, partnering with author and wildlife artist and good friend Nancy. She's been a guest on this show. We came up with a great contest we're calling Baking with Love. It's easy to enter, no purchase necessary. There'll be a first prize and grand prize we know you'll want. Stay tuned for details. And click blog on the toolbar. There's nothing there yet about the contest, but there will be shortly. Follow Out West Shop on Facebook for our daily post featuring a book of the day and updating as there's always something fun happening out west.
That's right. And Bobby Jean and her husband Jim have their stores in Albuquerque. And everybody we have on this show, their book winds up in their store. So if you want to know where to get it,
it's on
you
our
can
website.
Go to Amazon, you can go to online booksellers, or you can go directly to Out West, and they've got a copy, and hopefully an autographed copy, if she tells the authors to order autograph them before they send them over. But she does a great job in putting everybody's books online, and all you have to do is go to her website and click on Writer's Block and then the books, and boom, we're there. So good job, Bobby.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It is now 6:30. We are in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell, and of course our guest tonight is Philip Thompson, author of the best-selling and soon to be probably bestseller of Old Anger, a story about murder and racial tensions and problems in the Deep South. And Philip, I'm going to ask you a question about your when you writing, do you write for your enjoyment? Do you write for your reader's enjoyment? Do you write for your ego, or you know, to books, or all of the above?
That's a good question. I'm gonna have to say I write for myself most of the time, and try not to think about, you know, somebody who, you know, didn't like the profanity in the last novel, or something like that. I've got a story that I think's worth telling, and I want to tell it. So I pay a lot of attention to just to the act of writing. So I'm doing it for myself, first of all.
Okay. Bobby, you got a question? You're sitting there looking at me like,
I do. I spent a lot of time on your website. It's really great. And I enjoyed reading a number of your blogs. And one of them, we had lists of playlists, music that you enjoy. And you talk a little bit about how music helps you. Tell us about you and music.
Okay. I find it very difficult to write while I'm listening to music when I'm actually doing the writing part of it. And that's going to sound kind of weird, but I'll try to explain it. Because if I'm listening to the music while I'm writing, I'm going to end up having a novel with, you know, 15 U2 lyrics in the book. I love to use music to sort of, you know, set a mindset for me. I'll listen to music during the day or, you know, when I'm in the gym or, when I'm, you know, going back and forth to work or something, just to sort of get my mind oriented on what I want to do that day writing wise. When I'm actually in the process of creating though, that's dead silent time. I'm usually very quiet, very, very solitary. Because I write longhand first. I use an old notebook and a pencil, and I write the chapter or I write the piece that I'm working on. I write it out in longhand, in pencil, and I don't think about it. I don't edit it. I just write it. And then, you know, when I'll go back and transcribe it, you know, onto my Mac. And while I'm doing that, while I'm in the act of transcribing, yeah, I'll put a playlist on and just let the music, you know, just crank it up and let it go, because it's, then it becomes very soothing to me. And it's usually the same kind of music. I try to come up with a playlist. Like when I was doing this book, Old Anger, I knew that Molly was going to have a different kind of role than she had in Outside the Law. So I created a playlist that sort of emphasized women's stories and music. You know, there was a lot of Lucinda Williams in that particular playlist, or, you know, Bobby Gentry, or a band out in LA called Dorothy. And it just sort of helped me orient my mind to get into the mood to write particular parts of it. Does any of that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that's really helpful.
Sure. I like heavy. I like hard rock. I like hard rock myself. I mean, you know, I crank it up when I'm writing. I can't do it when I'm writing. I listen to really, really like soothing stuff when I'm writing. But when I'm editing and when I'm going back through and maybe formatting, or when we're doing other people's books, man, I get hard on there, or, you know, some of the really good hard rock stuff, and just let her rip, and I'm just happier to pick and poo-poo. Oh, absolutely.
One thing that I found that really works, and I found it by accident. I was watching the series Get Shorty, not the movie, the television version, and the soundtrack for the TV show is just a fantastic, constant jazz drum line. And I forget the name of the drummer. He's very famous. But I thought, you know, that's a really cool soundtrack, because it's got this kind of a groove to it when you're watching the show. Well, I was able to find some of that and build a playlist. And when I'm transcribing the longhand into the computer, that just puts me in a groove to where I can go for hours and into that. It sort of becomes this self-fulfilling thing. I can just listen to that music and keep typing all day long.
Yeah, I totally get that. In fact, there's a drummer that I absolutely love. He's from Ukraine, and there's a tribute band in the Ukraine called Leonid and Friends, and they do all of the Chicago songs, and they do them better than Chicago does them. Well, you can't tell they're Russian singers. You can't tell any of that. The musicianship is phenomenal. But their drummer, I got to tell you, Philip, their drummer will make you cry. He is so good.
Is there a certain place, when you talked about being solitaire in a, you know, you're solitary with your notebook, is there a place that is also your writing space?
I have a room in my house that I use solely for that. As a matter of fact, I just moved into a new place, my girlfriend and I did, and I'm turning one of the rooms in the attic into a studio to where I can go in and do that. I usually like to have a particular room to go in where I can just sort of shut the door, you know, and pull the blinds down, and then just let the characters get out of my head and start, you know, talking back to me. But I don't always have that opportunity. You know, tomorrow I'm going to go away for a weekend just by myself to a place on the beach where I'm just going to hold myself up for 3 days and write. But I've also, I wrote most of Outside the Law, for example, on a commuter train in Virginia, because it was the only time that I had to write was the hour and 10 minutes in the morning and the hour and 10 minutes in the evening. And, you know, it's not a good thing. I'm sort of antisocial. And I can just sort of block out the world and all the voices, and I can get on a train seat, for example, and I will be oblivious to my surroundings. And then I can just focus on the notebook.
Fascinating.
How long does it take you to write a novel?
Depends on all the things we just discussed. I, when, when I started writing Old Anger, it probably took me, by the time we got through a long and sometimes difficult process of deciding on what the book was, I wrote it in about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
There was a good year of negotiating before that, though.
Now, you do it longhand. Who does the transcription?
I do. That's my first edit.
So you do them. You do both. Wow.
Well, I mean, I'll do the longhand, and then I'll transcribe it, and I just sort of consider that my first edit. You know, I have this habit of sometimes skipping a word when I write.
Go
back and
catch
all those and clean up the spelling. And, you know,
sure.
I'm a journalist by trade. Was in the newsroom for, you know, years. So I'm a compulsive editor anyway, which can be a problem for, you know, you mentioned new writers. You know, don't edit, just write.
And that's really what we tell them.
About breaking that own rule.
We have a...
You know, then when I transcribe it, I kind of clean up my own stuff, and then the editor gets a hold of it, and then it's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, we have an occasional co-host that actually co-hosted our show when Bobby moved to Albuquerque, and he was in the newsroom for forever, sports writer and feature editor, and then he started writing science fiction, and he's mm-hmm. horrible on editing. I mean, the guy, you know, he writes the sentence and has to edit it. And,
right.
he's my business partner as well, because we have Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing together, but he's like, Richard, have you finished editing this book yet? Well, no.
So, Philip, since you come from
a writing instructor. This is years ago, back when we were still using desktop computers, right? So you had a keyboard and this big honking monitor in front of you that you could turn on and off, not like a laptop today. And he would just drill it into, you know, the student's head, if you're having a hard time, whether it's writer's block or, you know, you are a compulsive editor, when you sit down to write, turn the monitor off and just write. Just use the keyboard, turn the monitor off, and write for an hour. That way you can't even see what you're writing. You can't see the misspelled words or the dangling participle or whatever it is. And then when you're done, then you can turn it on and go back. But you know, a little trick to keep yourself from doing. I'm really bad about that too. I'll sometimes get snagged, you know, wanting to, that's not the word I wanted to use. It's like, you can fix it in post, just get the thing done.
Well, hold that thought. And the next question we're going to ask, Bobby Jean is going to ask it, because it's our very most important question of the evening. But right now we're going to take a real short break, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you after a real short message from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting off's indie additional all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started. Or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity, it's your brand, it's your future.
And we are back. It is now 6:42. And Bobby Jean, feel free to ask the question.
Okay, so Philip, no, this is going to be a simple one for you. Yes, you sure did. You opened the door to it. So because we do want to reach out to authors, new authors and such, give us a little guidance about you and writer's block. Do you get it? If you do, how do you get through it, around it, over it? And if you don't get it, why not?
I don't have a whole lot of experience with writer's block, probably because I've always been told my entire life that I just talk too damn much. So there's always a thought process going in my head. But I know some people who have, and it's like Anything else, I believe, you know, if you're obsessing over something or over-focusing on it, then you're never going to get through it. You know, maybe stop writing and read for a while, which is, I've had a bunch of people ask me, you know, well, I've never written a book, but I want to, you know, I'm a new writer, I'm a young, you know, not a young writer, but I've had people who are starting out ask for, you know, advice on it. What's the most important thing a new writer can do? You know, read. We spend so much time as writers focusing on craft, you know, learning the craft and, you know, getting the creative writing MFAs and going to conferences and all this. But to me, reading is the channel where it all comes together. I didn't want to become a writer by sitting in literature class. Reading made me want to become a writer. And when I get to the point to where it's like, okay, that was a tough hour, tough 2 days of writing, you know, I'll stop sometimes and just pick up a book and just read. Because that's where I'm going to see the craft come to life, and you learn voice and you learn imagery, and when you lose yourself in a story, it kind of frees your mind up a little bit, and it lets that part of your brain start flowing again. I mean, that's reading to me has been a part of my life since I was able to read, you know, 3-4 years old, and it's the mainstay of everything that I try to do as a writer. I don't read nearly as much as I should anymore, but I still think that's the most important thing to keep in the flow going.
Okay. Okay. Do you set aside a certain amount of time to write every day, or do you just write until you're done for the day?
You know, I started this a long time ago when I had kids who were very small, and for some reason having toddlers in the house seemed a little bit more controllable than, you know, life today, because I could put the kids to bed, and as soon as I put them to bed, I would take 1 hour to write, and I would say, I'm going to sit down and write for an hour tonight. Sometimes it was an hour, and sometimes it was only, you know, 20 minutes of actually writing, because I was staring at the screen the rest of the time. Sometimes it was 2 hours. So yeah, I usually will say, I'm going to write for an hour. Even, you know, even today, I'll say to my girlfriend, I'm going to go write for an hour. And sometimes it's an hour and sometimes it's three. But I try to aim for at least an hour, and it's not every day, but it's 3 days a week at a time.
Okay. And one of the most important things we always tell new writers is that never give up your day job. Don't do it.
Yeah, that's true too.
Don't do it. But, you know, because a lot of new writers think they're going to write a book and they're going to publish it, and it's going to make them, they can quit their job because it's going to sell a million copies. Thank you for playing.
And it's about the same odds as becoming a major league shortstop, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Or a musician. I was 8 years old, I wanted to be shortstop. The same thing with any endeavor like this, you know, especially, you know, in the creative world. But, you know, as writers, you know, don't forget all about, you know, agents and publishers and New York and movie options and all that. And I've had plenty of people come to me, I got this great idea for a book, but I don't know what to do. My advice is always this: write it. Just write the damn thing.
That's what most creative writing teachers will tell you too. Write your story.
Until you write it.
Exactly.
Are you working on anything now that we're going to see in the near future?
I am working on something now. I'm going to take my annual solo retreat starting tomorrow and continue working on the next Cold Harbor novel. The working title right now is One Man's Law. And it's just going to be, you know, the latest dilemma that Colt, Molly, and John find themselves enmeshed in.
Great.
It's going to have the usual, you know, rural Mississippi and various lowlifes that interfere with Cold Harbor's view of justice and the law.
Mm-hmm. So the same characters in same area, kind of to the same area.
Yeah, they're not done with me yet. They keep talking.
Well, where can readers find you, Philip? I mean, you have a web address and you have all kinds of emails, so why don't you give them out?
Sure. PhilipThompsonBooks.com is the website. And of course, okay. you can get the books at Amazon, or you can go to brashbooks.com. That's my publisher. Fantastic group of people that have really supported me as a writer, which is the best thing a writer could ever hope for. They have the books there too.
And of course they have them on Out West.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. On our bookshop affiliate. And so you can go to Out West Shop and then click books and CDs and then click Out West Shop affiliate and you'll find them right there. And they're there now. And as soon as this show is done, there'll be a podcast link to this interview posted with each of those two books.
There you go.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, I have to say, Philip, it's been an interesting 50 minutes. I just enjoyed the hell out of having you with us.
As did I.
You're a very interesting guy. And, you know, we love it when we have conversations that actually are 50 minutes, but they last in our brains five.
Yeah, it did seem to go fast.
It went fast. Well, good ones always do. And you know, go ahead, Bobby. Oh, she's locked
no,
up.
I'm done.
Oh, there you are. We didn't hear you. Oh, don't hear you now.
I just was going to say that the conversation goes so fast that it'll stay with us.
There you go. Okay, well, Philip, thanks again for joining us. It's time. We're going to have to sign off here. Let us know when you get your new book out, and we'll see if we can't get your book sometime later in the year. It's probably going to be close to the end of the year, but we book up pretty fast, and right now we're booked up through June. So, anyway, okay. If you do that for us, let us know, and we'll see if we can't get you in again. And again, thank you for joining us, Mr. Philip Thompson, Virginia, and it's been a hoot having you. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you both. It was good to meet you.
Yeah, and good to meet you as well. And next week, we have a Mickey Mickelson client, Mr. Mark Leslie. He will be on talking about his newest work, and I do not have the name of his book. Although you got it, Bobby. I did too, but I haven't opened it yet.
Exactly. I haven't either tonight.
probably. So anyway, it was a great show, and it's wonderful being able to sit here and see you. And to see Ronan tonight.
I know. How fun to see Ronan.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What a treat that was. Okay. For Sam and Ronan and Bobby and Russ and myself and the writer's block in whole, we are out of here.